As the exclusive sponsor of Grant and Danny, the law firm Kondori and Murad's going to guide you and your family in the right direction. They'll help you draft a will, set up a trust, and if need be, create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Set my parents there. They will take good care of you like they took care of them. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. They will get you a discount. kmlawyers.com. We've been talking about the Olympics off and on today, our Olympic coverage on The Fan, presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan against AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. One of the events tonight when people watch the primetime coverage of the Olympics that you'll see is the 4x200-meter freestyle relay. Final for the women. And I bring this up to tell you, I just think this is unbelievable. Two of the four members of that relay team, in fact, the third and fourth leg, anchoring the relay, both went to Stone Ridge School of the Sacred Heart in Bethesda. Think about how insane
that's nuts.
Barry Sferluga pointed out that Phoebe Bacon, the top qualifier in the 200 back, also went to that school. All on the Olympic women's team.
Not a bad swim program there at Stone Ridge.
Stone Ridge School of the Sacred Heart. I don't know anything about it, but it's in Bethesda.
Yeah, it's in Rockville right by Georgetown Prep.
People are driving past it right now listening to Grant and Danny.
Mm-hmm.
From Bethesda!
50% of the four women
that's crazy.
Representing the United States of America in the pool, gunning for gold in the relay tonight as you're watching in primetime, went to that school right here in our backyard. Pretty amazing. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. We are covering the teams in town you care the most about, the Nats, the Commanders, the NFL. Let's get to it. Mark Zuckerman gets us started, massinsports.com. Mark, tell me why I'm wrong. I'm now on losses are good mode for the Nationals. They went into sell mode. It's tank season. They have the fourth best shot at the number one pick. There's no rules against them getting the number one pick this year. Let's go get the top pick.
I get where you're coming from, Grant, but here's what I would say. If you're somebody who cares about the progress of the rebuild, and you've seen over the last 3 years them work their way up now to 71 wins last year, and this year they've been ahead of that pace, I think emotionally there's a little bit of a letdown if you end up somewhere in the 60s this year with one of the worst records in baseball. But I think even on a more practical level, here's what I'd say in counter to that. And I'm not saying this should be the case, but I think it could be the case. If they fall back to that extent, then is it a harder sell for Mike Rizzo to go to Mark Lerner this winter and say, hey, we're ready to win. Go spend us some money on free agents. As opposed to if you get to 75, 76 wins and you say, hey, we hung around for a while. We've got good young pitching. We got the other young kids up here. We're ready, but we've got a couple important holes we need to fill. It's time to start spending on free agents again. I think it's a little easier sell. And again, I'm not saying that it should be that way, but I think on some kind of subconscious level, you see a team in the mid-70s, you think, okay, we're not that far away. You see a team in the 60s, you're saying, no, we're not ready to win yet.
Mark, what's going on with Mackenzie Gore? He had one strikeout the other night. I think he'd like it to no longer be July. I know it's not anymore, but goodness gracious, just it has not seemed like himself. It really looks like he's really fighting it, going through something.
Well, the good news, Danny, is that actually he felt like it was a step forward yesterday, and it was, given what he had done the last few weeks prior to that. The one strikeout was odd. His velocity was down a little bit. He said it was a combination of, I think, just his stuff didn't feel as good. He did go into the start kind of making a point to say, I need to throw more strikes, given how high his pitch counts had been recently, and so a little different approach. And he said the Diamondbacks were very aggressive against him, and that was their mindset offensively the entire series. They swung early in the count, so he didn't get the two strikes a lot. The last inning of it didn't go so well. There was an inherited runner that scored. I thought up to that point it was a step forward for him. Obviously not as good as he needs to be or wants to be. Hopefully this is like the first step towards him returning to that. These last 2 months are huge for him. If he really is going to be a frontline starter for this team, he's got to show he can do it over a full season. And what he did in July really negated a lot of the good things he did from April to June.
Mark, James Wood, 3-for-9 in the Diamondback series, also walked 4 times, which was really good to see. The process has been excellent. The results have kind of varied from time to time. But how you feeling about the rookie at this point?
I'm still feeling really good. There was that lull there in like his second and third week in the big leagues where he was swinging at everything. He didn't draw any walks, I think, over like 50 plate appearances. Was starting to get frustrated. Was hitting the ball hard, but a lot on the ground. He's elevating the ball now. He's hitting for extra bases. And what you just said about the four walks, I thought that was huge. There was one in the ninth inning yesterday when they're trying to mount a comeback, and he's got a chance in the top of the ninth to either tie the game or give him the lead. And he gets to a 3-2 count, and I'm sure he's feeling like, hey, I can be the hero here. And instead, he got a pitch off the plate, and he took it for ball four, and he brought up the next batter. Now, the next batter, I think it was Harold Ramirez, struck out, so it didn't work out. But from his individual standpoint, that's what you want to see. If you get the right pitch to swing out, go for it. He didn't take your walk. I think that's an important lesson for a 21-year-old, and I've seen more patience from him over the last week or so to go along with hitting the ball hard when he does get it over the plate.
Mark, something that it's easy for me as just a bloviating jerk to talk about trading guys or you know, sell this guy or cut this guy, et cetera, but you're on the front lines. You're in the locker room. You talk to these guys. You build your relationships as you've done for so many years. What was the mood post-trade deadline of the guys in the clubhouse?
It wasn't great, I'll be honest. It was pretty down. Also didn't help that they lost that game 17-0.
So sure, yeah.
What kind of mood you're going to be in anyways, but I think they understood the Winker and Floro trades, that these guys were brought in on one-year deals. They did well. You flip them and get something in return. I think the Lane Thomas one hurt them legitimately. They looked at him as an important player and leader on the team and somebody who they believed could be part of a team that's trying to win next year. Now, I understand the reasons why they made the move, and if Dylan Cruz is everything he's supposed to be, he's going to take that spot anyway. So it made sense from a baseball standpoint. But I do think they didn't love it. Now, they were glad that Finnegan wasn't traded, for sure. There was a sigh of relief there. If he had gone too, you would have had a lot of disappointed people in there. But I think more than anything, the guys who've now been around for a few cycles of this, and Finnegan's at the top of the list because he's actually been here since 2020, this 4 straight years they've been sellers. They don't want to be in this position anymore. They're sick of it. Finnegan's sick of having his name come up every July, even though he ultimately has been retained. They really want a year from now to be on the other side of the equation and be in a position where the front office is trying to add players instead of subtract them. Obviously, it's up to them to perform. But this one, I think even more so than the previous years, felt like, are we still in this position? We're still selling guys off, especially guys who have another year of control. So they understood the reasons why, but I think emotionally it was a tough one for them.
Mark, great as always. Thank you for the info.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, enjoy the homestand. Be good. Let's talk football. Our buddy Nate Davis of USA Today Sports. Nate, let's start with the big news out of Chargers camp. Justin Herbert is dealing with plantar fascia, and he's week to week. Now his status in question ahead of week one. Just how big of a setback is this, considering it's a new staff, a lot of new players in that offense for the Chargers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a setback. I don't think his status for week one is really in question at this point. I mean, it sounds like he'll be in boot for 2 weeks just to kind of be extra careful with it. But, you know, you want your starting quarterback taking reps in training camp. As you said, new staff, and then certainly in his case, he's working with a remade receiver core. But I don't think this is a 3-alarm fire just yet.
Nate, read your piece in USA Today. Playoff teams that sort of ranking them in order of groups that might not make it back to the postseason. Every year there's a big turnover in that regard. The league thrives on it. Who are some of the teams that you think are most at risk of not making the postseason again?
Yeah, I think probably I'm a little bit in the minority with Houston. I think people kind of forget that they won the division the last day of the regular season last year, finished just a game ahead of the Jags and the Colts, who were both, you know, dealing with some fairly serious injuries last year. So I like those two teams, I think, a little better based on schedule and some other things. And then the Texans, you know, might be fine. I think there's also a certain, you know, aspect of this where the AFC is just so deep. There are so many good quarterbacks over there that you're probably going to have one or two teams that missed the playoffs in the AFC that probably would be Super Bowl contenders in the NFC. But Houston is one. Miami's another. You know, I think they've had big second half fades the last couple of years. You look at their schedule, they're kind of set up for another one. And obviously with Aaron Rodgers back, the division looks a little tougher. So those are two examples that pull out there.
Tristan Wirfs got a massive contract today, the tackle for the Tampa Bay Bucks. First, your reaction to how much money he got in that market at left tackle, what that could mean for Trent Williams. Also, an NFC South thought from you.
Yeah, not surprised. I mean, I think Tristan Wirfs has earned that contract makes him the highest paid offensive lineman, you know, given his age, given what he's done in his first couple of years, protecting Tom Brady. I mean, I think he's kind of that guy. I think it probably helps Trent Williams, who wants a little sweetener out of his deal. You know, he formerly had the highest contract. He's also 36, so I don't know if the 49ers, particularly given the other things they're facing, are necessarily going to bump him back up there. But I think it does kind of, you know, give context to that market that Trent Williams has sat atop for so long. And you said NFC South thought, Grant?
Yeah, just the division and state of the union. I mean, are the Bucs, in your opinion, as good as the Falcons on paper?
The Bucs have continuity. I mean, to me, it's kind of the same as what it has been. You've got the Bucs, the Falcons, and the Saints all kind of in that, you're looking like they're in that 8, 9, or 10 win category. And, you know, they're probably all going to get a little fat off of the Panthers. I think it's kind of remarkable people do forget the Bucs haven't missed the playoffs since 2019. That being said, they're also 18-19 over the last two seasons, and then that's obviously usually a function of being in that division. But, yeah, I'm going with the Falcons to win it. I mean, I think they've got more upside, finally getting, you know, presumably a solid quarterback there. I admire that the Bucs have kind of kept the band together, and I think they'll be, you know, probably a solid team week to week, but I think Atlanta's got a little bit more firepower, so I think maybe they knock them out of first place this year.
Nate, you and I think are right about the same age. Are you familiar with the classic movie Princess Bride?
Of course.
So I think we need Indigo Montoya to show up at Jerry Jones's door, who keeps saying they're all in, and I think we need Indigo to say, do you keep saying that word? I don't think it means what you think it means. Like, what is Jerry Jones talking about all in?
I think that's a great question. I've been wondering that for months. You know, I kept thinking, well, surely, you know, he sat out free agency. He'll get some second wave guys like he usually does. That didn't happen. I thought he might get some guys in the draft that were clearly, you know, players that were going to help them win immediately. And what seems like a, you know, team that's got to win now. That didn't happen. Thought he would restructure some deals to create some cap space to get some other things done. So I think in Jerry's mind, it means he's already paid all this money. He's already been all in, and like, you know, this is what you get, Mike McCarthy. But it's hard to square. And, you know, even if they get Dak Prescott extended and or CeeDee Lamb extended, it's all going to happen in a way that it's not going to help them bring in other players at this point. So it's just, I can't make heads or tails of it.
Nate, thank you. We appreciate having you on today.
Thank you, fellas.
See you, buddy.
Good, sir. Let's talk some local football. Well, it's good to see Mitch Tischler of Monumental Sports out at practice today. Mitch, let's talk Brandon Coleman. I liked what I saw from the big fella at left tackle.
Yeah, he's starting to stack days here. He's looked good ever since they kind of started giving him those number one reps. And today was a fun day because O-line and D-line got to do some full pad one-on-one drills, and Brandon Coleman was a standout guy there. He won all four of his reps and looks really strong.
Is it possible to overstate how much that would mean for not only, you know, the offensive line, for the team, but even this front office, if they just sort of were like, yeah, we'll just wait to the third round and watch this. We got a franchise left tackle. Like, quantify that for us. What would that mean?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the front office. I think it shows kind of their confidence and their evaluation. I was probably one of the loudest yellers about them needing to use one of their second-round picks on an offensive tackle because it was such a big hole. And they just sat there and they let tackles come off the board, and they were comfortable. They knew who they wanted, and they went out and got them. And, you know, that would be such a big hit in their first year to get a franchise left tackle. But I think we got to pull the reins on the horses here a little bit. He's looked good a couple of days in a row in practice. I'm not ready to, you know, anoint him as the next Trent Williams or anything. I think when this team goes up to New York and gets to play the Jets in that joint practice, and then also, you know, in the preseason game, and then down to Miami, I think those will be two very, very big days for him to kind of prove where he's at.
Nick Allegretti is going to be on the show right around 5 o'clock. He's expected to be the left guard. What have you seen from him? What's he potentially going to bring to this group?
Well, I'll tell you, you guys are in for a treat. He is a fantastic personality and will be a lot of fun for you guys to have. You got to ask him about scoring the touchdown with Patrick Mahomes, I guess, last year.
Yeah, you know what's funny? We had him on for like a long interview right after they signed him and talked about that, and he was incredible. He's got to be one of the best interviews on the team.
Oh, yeah, and it's not often that the one of the offensive linemen are yeah, that guy.
True.
But he is. He's looked good. I mean, you know, in the one-on-one drills today, he was up and down, I would say, a little bit, went probably 2-2 in his four reps. But I think he's a guy that can kind of lock down that left guard position and kind of bring the interior of that offensive line together. I love what you're seeing out of Tyler Biadasz. We know who Sam Cosmi is. And I think Nick Allegretti is going to be another guy that can kind of step in and help these guys out.
Mitch, do they have a deep threat?
Yeah, Terry McLaurin. I mean, Terry just keeps making big plays in practice, and we've seen him over the past couple of years, you know, make these, you know, big catches downfield. We know about the Taylor Heinicke, you know, forget it. Terry's down there somewhere. I'll throw it. But they don't have necessarily a true speedster, a true guy that can do that. You kind of want Deami Brown to be that player, but he's one of those guys that kind of pops in camp every year when they're, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt, and then when they get out there and are playing real games and getting hit, he kind of disappears a little bit and isn't quite as much of a big play threat as you want him to be. So I really think it's going to be, you know, Terry and John are going to probably be the two guys that are running those deep routes the most. But if Terry is your deep threat, you're not doing half bad.
Mitch, thank you, bro. Good seeing you today.
Absolutely, great seeing you, Danny. When are we going to see you?
Keep looking for me. I'll be right there.
You broke up, but I wanted to hear your zing. What were you saying?
Oh, I'm going to hold my breath for him. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
Make sure we have oxygen on hand and aspirin.
Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports, joining us on our Beltway Blitz here on Grant and Danny. Speaking of being out at practice, did catch up with Emmanuel Forbes. You'll hear what he had to say, a little conversation with him. And I want to talk about his big second season looming next right here on The Fan. Grant, Danny, The Fan, taking you up to 6:30. Appreciate everybody making the show part of their day. Danny will be on vacay tomorrow, so your boy will be solo. You guys do the OBX.
We do indeed. We do indeed. We found the Friday to Friday rental instead of going on Saturday like the rest of the world does, and we are not letting it go. I love it.
The elusive Friday to Friday rental. What's your first stop when you get down there?
Great question.
The first thing you want to do to just kick off vacation, spot that you can't go to up here that you got to wait till you get there.
Duck Coffee. Duck Coffee Shop. It's one of my favorite places. It's right there in the little set of shops. It's on this little pond. It's beautiful. It's so calm. I grab a book. I grab a mug or like a travel thermos.
Bring a book with you that you plan on reading. You'll get one there.
I do, but I just love supporting that place. Like, it's like sort of like that first anchor spot of vacation.
How are we going to do how much weight did Danny gain on vacation?
We'll be able to do it, but I caution everyone that it might not be the number we're hoping for. Is that fair or is it not fair? Like, basically, I'm saying let's calibrate our expectations properly.
I think that a normal good week is what? 15 pounds? 12 pounds?
Normal for me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say a normal week of vacation
for you. It's double digits.
10 to 12 pounds.
Yep.
Should we prepare for 5 to 7?
I think so.
Is that?
I think that's what we should do.
Along the lines?
Yes.
Just performance enhancing drugs?
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're talking about.
Okay. We won't go into any more detail.
I think people get it.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The summary is I can't do this on my own. Doctor said so. So, like, here's an enhancer. Figure it out, buddy. Eat less, fatty. Keep doing what you're doing, but just put less food in your fat face.
I just don't know. I think that's what me, Darius, and Ryan will all have to just, whatever it used to be, let's trim that in half.
Well, because the bit is always, the part that people don't understand is when you go, you really didn't go nuts this year. You didn't really do anything crazy. You just kind of ate normal. And I still gained 10 pounds. It's to show you that this is what this stupid DNA, this fat, gross body, that's where the river goes, right? If you don't touch the river, it's going up,
but
that number.
But you put in some work, too.
And then I also put in work. Those are the big ones. Those are like the 16 pounds in New Orleans kind of things.
But even the weeks where you're pretending like you're like, I did everything right, there were a couple meals where you put in some work.
Oh, sure.
Because you...
Two meals over 9 days are going to make you gain 15 pounds?
No, they're not. They're certainly not. Well, why are you yelling at me? What did I do?
Well, you don't get nothing.
Emmanuel Forbes. What a weird transition from gaining 15 pounds.
Emmanuel Forbes desperate to gain weight, me desperate to lose
Emmanuel
it.
Emmanuel
yeah.
Forbes, who's the lightest cornerback in the history of the National Football League. I mean, that is ironic. No, he did supposedly gain 17 pounds, which came up.
Could you tell, by the way? Standing next to him?
No.
Mm.
I will say that if you told me he gained 5 pounds, I'd say okay. So what is that, really? But 17, generally, you would notice. Like, even if you're 230 pounds, if you put on 17 pounds of muscle, I would know it. If you're 165, you know, 17 pounds of that, you know, it's 9.5% of your body. He added almost 10% of his body weight. I feel like it would be a little more
You would
noticeable.
Notice.
But that's not neither here nor there. I mean, I'm sure he did. I don't think anybody's making it up. But he's a small guy. He just is. And I caught up with him today. Here's what he had to say.
Emmanuel, new camp, new season, new staff. How are you feeling about a weekend?
I'm feeling great. You know, I'm going out there competing every day. You know, just looking forward to it.
How did you view your rookie season and then getting back to work after last year? What kind of things did you prioritize when you got back after it?
Definitely one thing is my weight and, you know, just learning the playbook and, you know, creating a closer bond with my coaches.
When you say closer bond, was that an issue you thought in the past, or was it something that you just realized now as a veteran second-year player in the league maybe could elevate your game?
Well, there's a lot of gray area, you know, but they definitely knows a lot about DBs and turning over the ball and getting turnovers. So I just take bits and parts of that out of their mind, and they help me all day, every day, you know, and just help me out.
Yeah, on the outside looking in, it feels like to me when they hire Dan Quinn and they bring in Joe Witt, there's no position group that should be more excited about those guys coming here than the DBs and the corners and ball hawks, because they've had a whole career of elevating guys. When you found out that was what the staff was going to look like, what was your reaction and how much studying did you do on their track record?
I already had a track record on them. You know, they wanted me at Dallas out of the draft, but they weren't able to get me. So it was we already had kind of a close relationship. You know, when they got hired, it's the best thing for me, I feel like.
And I think a lot of people on the outside have this idea of what the Dan Quinn corner looks like. It's that big, long, physical bruiser. But here you are working with the first team. He's been raving about how you look so far. How do you feel as a fit in this scheme defensively?
I fit perfect. You know, that as long as I got ball skills and able to do my job and create turnovers, I'm going to be great in this defense. So, yeah.
You've made, I guess other people have too, made a lot about the weight you've added. You referenced it. It's not like me adding weight where I go to the drive-thru. Like, it's hard for you, I'm sure, to grind. What went into adding? I think you said 17 pounds. What went into that?
Nothing, just it's my job. You know, they asked me to do something, and I had to do it. And it's making me feel better. I feel better by myself, by my body, moving good, and just stronger, honestly.
But I just meant, like, was there a... You know, we've heard, like, Michael Phelps, the swimmer, would eat, like, 12,000 calories. Was there a program you were on with, like, lifting or eating? Like, how did it actually work to do that?
Yeah, it was a lot of eating, a lot of resting, you know, rest my body, a lot of working out, and just, honestly, just trying to take care of my body and eating better. So, yeah.
Last couple things. Do you feel like going into year two with a new staff now, it's a new lease on life? Do you just hit reset, or do you enjoy looking back at last year and kind of learning from that?
Just leave the past on the past. You know, it was a learning moment, of course, but it helped me out, and look forward to this year.
Last thing, next week, you guys actually get to practice against somebody else, play a game. Are you at a point now in this process where you're ready to just stop seeing your own guys and see somebody else?
Yeah, you know, we looking forward to going to the joint practices and preseason games, and we just keep getting better each day with each other, so yeah.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
I felt like there were a couple of potential nuggets there. The first was, when I asked him, what did you want to prioritize and do differently than last year? And he said he wanted to get his weight up, which we'll get back to. And he said, create a closer bond with my coaches.
Whoa. Does your radar go up there?
I followed up. I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, there was a lot of gray area. Didn't really give a lot of details. He would go on in the interview to say, I'm leaving the past in the past. But he wanted to create a closer bond with his coaches. I would say that's pretty telling.
It is pretty jarring to hear that, because it means that But the implication, of course, is there wasn't one previously. That's a pretty reasonable conclusion there, right?
And by the way, if I'll, you know, just naming random DBs that came through, Corn Elder or some practice squad hopeful at some point, or some you know, waiver wire claim that played like Rashad Wild Goose, didn't have a great relationship with coaches or whatever, maybe that's a little more understandable. This was the 16th overall pick in the draft who was really important to that front office and that coaching staff. So for him to say he wanted to create a closer bond with coaches, to me, is like screaming into a megaphone about that group a year ago. Now, maybe it doesn't matter anymore. He really seems to like the current group, and how could you not? What does Dan Quinn's resume look like? What does Joe Witt's resume tell you? Those guys make defensive backs better. And I got into it with him. Traditionally, you don't think about guys that look like Emmanuel Forbes when you think about their style of corner. But he says, essentially, that they wanted him coming out. He knows that. I didn't know that. But he said, basically, they looked at me. They were going to draft me. They didn't get a chance to. They like my ball skills. Well, they had back-to-back years, I think three in a row, actually, out of the last four, where they had the leading interceptor in the league in their scheme defensively in their secondary. And now they got a guy who set the all-time record in pick sixes. So if you're Emmanuel Forbes, after the disaster that your rookie year was, where you got benched and you played the way that he did, what better chance, what better way to get back to playing like you did in college
indeed
than with this group coaching you?
Yeah, if there's anybody to do it, it's this particular group. I remember, it reminds me, I had a teammate years ago, and this is something I'm wondering about. I don't have a good answer. But a teammate years ago, he wasn't very good, and he just decided, the coaches don't like me. Coaches don't like me. Because he didn't perform well and got benched and ultimately transferred. But you wonder, was that it? Was it because they were so annoyed that you weren't playing very well? Were you not following instruction? The coach doesn't like me, or I want a closer bond with my coach. Maybe he felt unsupported. I mean, it could be a two-way street, right? You could have not been coached very well. Certainly stands to reason that his previous defensive backs coach was a high school coach in his prior experience. Or if it was, he wasn't performing very well, so they kind of had to focus on guys that were, and he felt like he was alone on an island. I don't know the answer to that, but sometimes when you're benched, you think, oh, the coach hates me. And it's like, maybe he doesn't love your performance and still likes you as a person. I don't know, but that is an intriguing response.
He started today outside on the boundary opposite Benjamin St. Just, who's having a really good camp again. Question for you guys on the phones. Let's open them up at 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines available to you. Do you expect Emmanuel Forbes to start all season? You know, last year, he ended up getting benched and was in and out of favor with that aforementioned staff. Do you think he gets right and breaks out this year and becomes an unquestioned starter? Or a year from now, are we talking about, you know, him being toward the back end of the DB's room? Which way is this going to go? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Good day to be, bad day to be, NFL edition. Good day to be, Tristan Wirfs, Tampa Bay Bucks, Pro Bowl offensive tackle, 5-year contract, $140 million. He's getting paid almost $30 million a year, resets the tackle market, highest paid player at his position. Good news for Trent Williams of the San Francisco 49ers. Bad news and a bad day to be Justin Herbert of the LA Chargers, dealing with plantar fascia. He'll have to overcome that over the next few weeks as he's sidelined. They are saying they think he'll be ready for week one. That's the expectation. My concern is just that a new offense, a lot of new teammates. Are you able to play as well early in the year in week one, week two, whenever he gets back, based on losing this critical, massive next month of preparation? And oh, by the way, we haven't talked much about it, but there's football tonight. And if Caleb Williams was playing for the Bears, or if C.J. Stroud or any of the Texan starters were going, we'd probably talk more about it. But I will be watching that game when I get home this evening. At some point, I'm turning on the TV. It's NFL football on network television. ABC tonight. Why not?
It's kind of the out-of-town preview in town, right? It's the beginning It's more of a milestone than it is like an entertaining football game. I'm not going to take it for granted, but it just means that the calendar has turned, right? We are here.
Do you think Joe Buck's going to big time the game a little bit? That's the only thing sometimes, because I think
Buck, 100%.
He gets way too much crap for way too many things. He's outstanding. But the one thing that he does that does wear on me a little bit is in moments like tonight, where, dude, it's an NFL game. I understand the score doesn't matter and the players, by and large, aren't making teams. But we could just do a broadcast, right? Like, you don't have to pat the game on the head the whole time. We don't have to belittle the football match and the guys that are out on the field because I'm big bad Joe Buck. He does a little bit of that sometimes where it's like he's bigger than the game.
Yeah, you could save a little bit of the Tony snark.
I think we're going to get some of that tonight.
Yeah, I think so, too. And again, I'm with you. I'm in lockstep. I think he's excellent. Catches way too much guff because, you know, people incorrectly are like, he doesn't like my team. Like, he likes him fine or doesn't like him. He doesn't care. But there's that. Right. He does nothing, but he does so many big games, right, that it sometimes feels like he's got to let you know that this one's not up to his snuff. I'm doing a World Series game in a couple of months, or I'm doing,
well,
you know, this.
Make a joke out of a commercial, yeah, or when they're doing their stand-up about, you know, are we going to stay to the end of this thing, Troy?
Yeah, Troy, who are we going to see tonight? No, seriously, who are we going to see?
Speaking of Troy Aikman, color commentator tonight with Joe Buck. We got to do our here's a guy counter. Or is Collinsworth more of a here's a guy? Right? Who's the here's a guy guy?
Remember, what was his name? It used to be on Sunday Night Football. Al McGuire. Was that the right name? I'm blanking
McGuire.
On Paul McGuire. Yeah, I don't know who Al McGuire is. But Paul McGuire was like, here's a guy. Like, he would start off every stanza with this. So, like, watch this. I am watching. It's on television.
Al McGuire was a basketball coach at Marquette in the 60s.
There you go. I'm often conflating Al McGuire with other McGuires.
Well, I know you loved Marquette in the 60s.
I did. That's when I became a fan.
Let's go to Kevin in Arlington on Grant and Danny. What's up, Kev?
Hey, just real quick. Grant, I sent you a PM on Instagram. My nephew was right next to your cousin when Jackson's ball ended down Utah Street. I sent you a picture.
Oh, what a small world.
That's crazy.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He's in town. We say goodbye to my father tomorrow at Arlington National Cemetery, and he's in from California. He's the one who actually played for the Cal Bears, drafted by the Cardinals, was a reliever, made it all the way to Memphis for the Redbirds, but that's where it ended. But he's doing okay. He's with Apple. He can do analytics. So all good. But I just couldn't believe when you were telling him the story. It's like, oh, my God. My nephew was right there.
Yeah, he lost a face-off to Grant's cousin Tim in that dog pile. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Exactly. So, you know, I wish I was more bullish on Forbes. But, guys, okay. You know, the linebackers drafted Jamin Davis. The Marty Corner drafted Forbes. Until I see that he can play, I'm just not going to believe it. I mean, that's encouraging that the coaching staff we now have was interested in him when they were in Dallas, but he just looked to me to be so overmatched, and I just can't get past it. The corner we should have taken, he's up in New England.
I'm with you, so, Kevin Lockstep.
I am in seeing is believing mode for him, too, for the record, Kev. I need to see it. I'm not going to put any eggs in that basket. Yeah. I will tell you, I think that they're giving him full confidence. They've got him out on the boundary, man-to-man against McLaurin. He was getting reps. I don't know if it's his decision or theirs, but, you know, one-on-ones, he's going against Terry today, Jahan. Like, they're treating him as if he's going to be starting, so they're going to give him every chance this summer.
Well, that's good. You know what? I hope he puts it in my face and says, you are wrong. I can play. I hope so.
So
I'm sorry to hear, by the way, about your father.
Yeah, here.
Hope everything goes well tomorrow.
That's okay. Actually, he passed in December. What it is to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery with all the Greatest Generation, you know, passing on, you have to wait months, and tomorrow's our day.
Yeah, that was the same experience for my grandfather.
Do,
yeah,
like the military, any of the, you know, the shots and any of that stuff in the air.
Yeah. Well, yes, it'll be full military honors. I'll send you some pictures, okay? Really looking forward to it because, again, at this pace, he lived 97 years.
Wow.
That's a hell of a life.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, man.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, and sorry to hear tomorrow will be a tough one for the fan, but it sounds like it'll be a great honor.
Yeah, it cannot but be moved. My grandfather's buried there.
Grandmother, same thing.
Yeah.
Arlington National Cemetery was in the war, and same thing,
yeah,
with honors, and it was a gorgeous ceremony.
Just the ceremony of it, the austerity of it, incredible. But to Kevin's far more trivial point, talking about the football, I'm in lockstep in terms of Forbes. And here's the thing: he's going to be here, right? If they didn't care about Forbes, if he was a fourth round Freddie or had been okay for a different regime or something, maybe he gets cut, maybe he gets benched, whatever. He's a first round pick. You could discard him and throw him away, put him at the back. Or you could do everything you possibly could to see. And it sounds like they are, which is, I think is encouraging. You might as well empower the kid, right? Might as well make him feel good. Might as well try to pump him up, give him as much confidence as possible, because you'll gain anything by having him in the tank.
I've got a funny Adam Peters story, something that happened at practice today that I want to pass along to people next. And you'll hear an interview with Nick Allegretti, who I caught up with out at training camp. He is the new starting left guard of the Commanders, came from the Chiefs. One of the best interviews on the team. I think you'll really enjoy that. Coming your way, top of the hour on Grant and Danny. Good day to be, bad day to be, NFL edition. Good day to be, Tristan Wirfs, Tampa Bay Bucks, Pro Bowl offensive tackle, 5-year contract, $140 million. He's getting paid almost $30 million a year, resets the tackle market, highest paid player at his position. Good news for Trent Williams of the San Francisco 49ers. Bad news and a bad day to be Justin Herbert of the LA Chargers. Dealing with plantar fascia, he'll have to overcome that over the next few weeks as he's sidelined. They are saying they think he'll be ready for week one. That's the expectation. My concern is just a new offense, a lot of new teammates. Are you able to play as well early in the year in week one, week two, whenever he gets back, based on losing this critical, massive next month of preparation? And oh, by the way, we haven't talked much about it, but there's football tonight. And if Caleb Williams was playing for the Bears, or if C.J. Stroud or any of the Texan starters were going, we'd probably talk more about it. But I will be watching that game when I get home this evening. At some point, I'm turning on the TV. It's NFL football on network television. ABC tonight. Why not?
It's kind of the out-of-town preview in town, right? It's the beginning. It's more of a milestone than it is like an entertaining football game. I'm not going to take it for granted, but it just means that the calendar has turned, right? We are here.
Do you think Joe Buck's going to big-time the game a little bit? That's the only thing sometimes, because I think
Buck, 100%.
He gets way too much crap for way too many things. He's outstanding. But the one thing that he does that does wear on me a little bit is, in moments like tonight, where, dude, it's an NFL game. I understand the score doesn't matter, and the players, by and large, aren't making teams. But we could just do a broadcast, right? Like, you don't have to pat the game on the head the whole time. We don't have to belittle the football match and the guys that are out on the field because I'm Big Bad Joe Buck. He does a little bit of that sometimes where it's like he's bigger than the game.
Yeah, you could save a little bit of the Tony Snark.
I think we're going to get some of that tonight.
Yeah, I think so, too. And again, I'm with you. I'm in lockstep. I think he's excellent. Catches way too much guff because, you know, people incorrectly like, he doesn't like my team. Like, he likes him fine or doesn't like him. He doesn't care. But there's that. Right. He does nothing, but he does so many big games, right, that it sometimes feels like he's got to let you know that this one's not up to his snuff. I'm doing a World Series game in a couple of months, or I'm doing,
well, he'll make,
you know,
a joke out of a commercial, yeah, or when they're doing their stand-up about, you know, are we going to stay to the end of this thing, Troy?
Yeah, Troy, who are we going to see tonight? No, seriously, who are we going to see?
Speaking of Troy Aikman, color commentator tonight with Joe Buck, we got to do our here's a guy counter. Or is Collinsworth's more of a here's a guy? Right? Who's the here's a guy?
Remember, what was his name? He used to be on Sunday Night Football. Al McGuire? Was that the right name? I'm blanking
McGuire.
On Paul McGuire. Yeah, I don't know who Al McGuire is. But Paul McGuire was like, here's a guy. Like, he would start off every stanza with this. So, like, watch this. I am watching. It's on television.
Al McGuire was a basketball coach at Marquette in the 60s.
There you go. I'm often conflating Al McGuire with other McGuires.
Well, I know you loved Marquette in the 60s.
I did. That's when I became a fan.
Let's go to Kevin in Arlington on Grant and Danny. What's up, Kev?
Hey, just real quick, Grant, I sent you a PM on Instagram. My nephew was right next to your cousin when Jackson's ball ended down Utah Street. I sent you a picture.
Oh, what a small world.
That's crazy.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He's in town. We say goodbye to my father tomorrow at Arlington National Cemetery, and he's in from California. He's the one who actually played for the Cal Bears, drafted by the Cardinals, was a reliever, made it all the way to Memphis for the Redbirds, but that's where it ended. But he's doing okay. He's with Apple. He's doing analytics, so all good. But I just couldn't believe when you were telling him the story. It's like, oh my God, my nephew was right there.
Yeah, he lost a face off to Grant's cousin Tim in that dog pile. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Exactly. So, you know, I wish I was more bullish on Forbes, but guys, okay. You know, the linebackers drafted Jamin Davis. The Marty Corner drafted Forbes. Until I see that he can play, I'm just not going to believe it. I mean, that's encouraging that the coaching staff we now have was interested in him when they were in Dallas, but he just looked to me to be so overmatched, and I just can't get past it. The corner we should have taken, he's up in New England.
I'm with you, Kevin. Lockstep.
I am in seeing is believing mode for him, too. For the record, Kev, I need to see it. I'm not going to put any eggs in that basket. Yeah. I will tell you, I think that they're giving him full confidence. They've got him out on the boundary, man-to-man against McLaurin. He was getting reps. I don't know if it's his decision or theirs, but you know, one-on-ones, he's going against Terry today, Jahan. Like, they're treating him as if he's going to be starting, so they're going to give him every chance this summer.
Well, that's good. You know what? I hope he puts it in my face and says, "You are wrong. I can play." I hope so.
So
I'm sorry to hear, by the way, about your father.
Yeah, here.
I hope everything goes well tomorrow.
That's okay. Actually, he passed in December. What it is to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery with all the Greatest Generation, you know, passing on. You have to wait months. And tomorrow's our day.
Yeah, that was the same experience for my grandfather.
Do, like the military, any of the, you know, the shots and any of that stuff in the air?
Yeah. Well, yes, it'll be full military honors. I'll send you some pictures, okay? Really looking forward to it because, again, at this stage, he lived 97 years.
Wow.
That's a hell of a life.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, man.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, and sorry to hear tomorrow. Will be a tough one for the fan, but it sounds like it'll be a great honor.
Yeah, it can't help but be moved. My grandfather's buried there.
My grandmother, same thing.
Yeah.
Arlington National Cemetery was in the war, and same thing,
yeah.
with honors, and it was a gorgeous ceremony.
Just the ceremony of it, the austerity of it, incredible. But to Kevin's far more trivial point, talking about the football, I'm in lockstep in terms of Forbes. And here's the thing. He's going to be here. Right. If they didn't care about Forbes, if he was a fourth round Freddie or had been okay for a different regime or something, maybe he gets cut, maybe he gets benched, whatever. He's a first round pick. You could, you know, discard him and throw him away, put him at the back, or you could do everything you possibly could to see. And it sounds like they are, which is, I think is encouraging. You might as well empower the kid, right? Might as well make him feel good. Might as well try to pump him up, give him as much confidence as possible, because you'll gain anything by having him in the tank.
I've got a funny Adam Peters story, something that happened at practice today. That I want to pass along to people next. And you'll hear an interview with Nick Allegretti, who I caught up with out at training camp. He is the new starting left guard of the Commanders, came from the Chiefs. One of the best interviews on the team. I think you'll really enjoy that. Coming your way, top of the hour on Grant and Danny.